we cut away to some really nice mid-80s like city pop music.
Oh my god, and yeah, the city so pop good. Is great in this.
The Miami Vice fucking get-up gear he has is so good.
Welcome to the motherfucking 80s, y'all.
Like, the glasses, the music, the fucking suit. He's got a vibe going. Maki's got a vibe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Castle Bravo, a Godzillaverse retrospective. I'm Derek.
And I'm Charlotte.
And we're two siblings here to examine the history of the Godzilla franchise, one movie at a time. We are also joined today for the first episode of the new season by fellow SDGC co-host Brittany, a.k.a. Peachia. Brittany.
I don't know how y'all got me back after the last one, to be honest.
this is the apology tour today. We had you on a couple of months ago in season two to do Godzilla versus Hedorah for listeners that for some reason are skipping around.
And why would you do that?
That's well, so here's the thing. I picked that one for Brit because it was going to be, I remember that it's a little trippy and a little weird. And I remember the club scene especially. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, let's have some fun with a weird one. I had forgotten how weird it is. And I had forgotten the trivia bit that Hedorah's eyes are supposed to be toxic vaginas with clit lasers.
How did you stumble upon that again?
And that's a pretty well-known piece of trivia that I just managed to forget because I know I knew it at one time, but
yeah, like that, on one hand, I'm like, how could you forget that? On the other hand, I'm like, I can see why you like mentally blocked that out.
Right. It's best to simply forget that they made a giant toxic sludge monster and decided to like Freudian associate the acidic sludge garbage monster with vaginas.
Very telling.
Yeah, that fucking huff smoke stick. Yeah,
the fucking took a fat fucking rip off of a factory smokestack. How are we doing today, everybody?
We're off
to a good froggy start.
Yeah.
Now, Charlotte, how you been?
I mean, I got over the gunk that was going around, but I still got a little bit gunk in here.
Yeah. Well, everybody in the Ohio Valley area has been dying of sinus infections over the last 2 weeks. So I know like five people who have had the worst sinus infection of their life within these last 2 weeks. So,
yeah.
Congrats on being part of that.
It's great to be a part of something.
Sure. But I mean, you know, community would be better than group of people dying of not having sinuses anymore, but
well, right, and all of you have been playing Zelda. I played through the both Fear and Hunger games and just started marathon. So,
oh, that's right, yeah. The marathon trilogy is now like widely available because Bungie's doing a new one. That'll have to be. I don't know anything about those, but I'll probably check them out.
I don't either. I know they heavily inspired Halo.
Yeah.
I'm not into an extraction shooter, but anyway.
Yeah, well, I just don't play online video games because...
Same.
God wanted us to play video games on a couch together with controllers wired across the floor as a tripping hazard.
That's right.
And I stand by that statement. Online multiplayer goes against God's wishes.
Hashtag blessed.
So I am excited. We are back earlier than originally anticipated for season three. Not waiting all the way till November to get these going again. So let's see. Where did we end off? We ended off season two with the end of the Showa era, Terror of Mechagodzilla. Oh, man. So things got weird for a bit after Ishiro Honda decided to kind of step away from Godzilla, because first we had like, you know, Destroy All Monsters and All Monsters Attack, and Honda was like, all right, you know what, I'm kind of stepping away for a bit. And Jun Fukuda stepped in and made a couple of really good, well, no, first we had Godzilla versus Hedorah, Then Fukuda came back and gave us a couple of good cult classics. Godzilla versus Gigan, Godzilla versus Megalon, Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. Honda came back for one last ride with Terror of Mechagodzilla, which is one of my favorites of the 50s, 60s, 70s, that whole what they call the Showa era of Godzilla. But for some reason, the movie tanked, which is ridiculous to me because I think that's one of the best ones. And in the aftermath of Terror of Mechagodzilla flopping, Toho really struggled to figure out what they were going to do next. It would be 9 or 10 years. I'm not here to do math this morning.
It's nine.
But. Yeah. Calculator. Thank you. Yeah. But and I'm supposed to be a math gay. How shameful. But it would be 9 years before they got another Godzilla movie out. Terror of Mechagodzilla's flopping made them very cautious about what they wanted to do. And I mean, there's like three or four movies that get attempted to get made that make it to treatment. And then they go, this isn't going to be it. Eventually, the decision is made that, hey, maybe what we need to do, maybe the reason that things fell off at the end was we were making these cheap, goofy kids movies about men wrestling in rubber suits, which, you know, we agreed was a lot of fun, but did pretty much go off the rails from where things started off with, you know, Ishiro Honda, you know, in the 50s and early 60s. So the idea was made to do, we want to do something darker. We want to do something more serious. We want to do something tonally more in line with the original movie. And we're going to make a direct sequel to the original. We're going to make a new Godzilla 2 and ignore everything else we've done since then. Really, we went off the rails at Godzilla Raids Again. We're just, this is Godzilla 2 now. Now, they were not, we'll talk about this more as Charlotte does plot summary stuff. I think this movie was made with Ishiro Honda in mind because, like, tonally, thematically, this is an extremely Ishiro Honda shit. But Honda would not return for this movie. Honda has made it clear multiple times that he was really uninterested. He barely came back for Terror of Mechagodzilla because, in his opinion, the whole thing should have ended once original special effects supervisor Eiji Tsuburaya died, which kind of solidifies what a lot of me and Charlotte were thinking, which is that these two men clearly became very close friends and not just colleagues after decades of working together.
Right.
So Toho tapped director Koji Hashimoto, who is not a stranger to the Godzilla franchise. He had been an assistant director and second unit director under Ishiro Honda for a lot of movies in the 60s, especially. So this is somebody who's familiar with Honda, familiar with Godzilla, familiar with the process. But it seems like he dropped out of the film industry mostly after this movie. And I can't find out why. Like, you know, today's movie, Return of Godzilla, was not a failure by any means. You know, it's critically and you know, well-received and well-received by audiences. He just kind of disappeared off the face of the earth, and he was kind of young too, so he's kind of too young to retire, but he didn't die. He didn't die for decades after, so I don't know.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
He saw behind the curtain and
yeah, he was just like, no, I'm fucking out of film. Special effects work by Teruyoshi Nakano, who is the special effects director from Godzilla vs. Ghidorah onward. He's basically who took over after Eiji Tsuburaya died. And he's here 9 years after the last Godzilla movie to come back and do some really impressive stuff with Return of Godzilla.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the music, this is kind of an interesting movie when it comes to its soundtrack. The music was scored by Reijiro Koroku, who has a pretty healthy list of credits, but not like a lot of big movies, not a lot of movies that have their own Wikipedia pages, if you know what I mean. Ifukube, longtime Godzilla composer, could not return due to scheduling conflicts. Less of an ideological thing and more Ifukube is a big name. He's busy. Can't come back. So.
Didn't you say he was teaching music at this point or something?
Maybe. I don't remember that, but either you're falsely remembering that I said that, or I did say that, and I'm forgetting that I read that. So don't take that as gospel. But but yeah, so that is kind of the summary of how we got to this movie existing. We had this huge 9-year gap. It's now 1984, and we are getting a new Godzilla 2 called Return of Godzilla, which a lot of folks in the West will know as Godzilla 1985, but we can talk a little bit more about that after we know more about the movie itself. Charlotte.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us what happens in this movie?
Okay. I will. So the movie starts and there are volcanoes exploding and, you know, the opening roll starts happening and it looks really good. It's really flashy. It draws you in immediately. But our story begins with some sailors trying to navigate through a storm, but they are quickly capsized near Daikoku Island as what honestly just looks like Godzilla is emerging from the island. And then we cut away to some really nice mid-80s like city pop music.
Oh my god, and yeah, the city pop is great in this.
The Miami Vice fucking get up gear he has is so good.
Welcome to the motherfucking 80s, y'all.
Like the glasses, the music, the fucking suit. He's got a vibe going. Maki's got a vibe.
Yeah. So the sailors are missing now. And Goro Maki, who's a reporter, is searching the inside of the ship like he rode out there.
Can I put a pin in this?
Yeah.
Does the name Goro Maki sound familiar?
It does.
Goro Maki was the journalist character from Son of Godzilla.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The guy who lands on the island and annoys the scientists and becomes the main character?
Yeah, okay.
So
is this like supposed to be the same guy?
I don't know. Like, it's one of those things that's well known. It's noted. Like, we have another slightly older, but in a way that makes sense because this is 1984 and not the mid-1960s.
Right.
You know, because Goro Maki in Son of Godzilla was a pretty young guy. But, you know, you could take it as a reference at the very least. But yeah, interesting piece. So.
Yeah. So he's inside the ship, and there's corpses everywhere. There's a sign of a struggle. And he's looking around. He finds the last survivor on the inside of a locker in the ship, and he checks his license. The license says Hiroshi. And this giant bug creature just attacks him. And he's about to die, but then Hiroshi kills the giant bug and saves him.
This is a great, weird little sequence. So up until the giant sea louse, like, appears, great, tense little, almost, like, horror sequence of walking through the ship. Like,
I thought it set the vibe for, like, the rest of the movie, kind of. And I was actually hoping for a little bit more of that, but, you know, as always, I had Zach with me watching, because it's his favorite Godzilla movie, and I was like, what the fuck was that? Like, was that a piece of Godzilla? And then, you know, of course you find out that it's something that...
Little parasite that attached to him and got mutated in the deep sea.
Yeah.
Right. Because Cloverfield invented nothing.
That's right.
But, but yeah, great sequence. And I love, you know, the Shaquilas, which is the name of the sea louse. But the giant sea louse puppet is... I think it's well designed. It doesn't move great, so it's kind of awkward as it like jumps all over the place. But
yeah.
I do like when it's like that sequence where it's right on his chest and he's on the ground and it's trying to get at his neck with its little mouthy bits. And he's like trying to get it with the knife, but the knife is glancing off the shell.
Yeah.
Just that's a very good, like really sold. Oh, man, fuck me. I would not want to have to deal with one of these little fuckers.
Yep.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oof. So yeah, really set the tone that we're doing a much more serious movie.
Yeah.
I'm in. I'm invested.
And so Hiroshi says that the island that they were near was basically was alive, and the monster that he saw on it was bigger than that giant sea louse that they killed. And I mean, we know what the monster was, but you know, they don't. So Goro goes back. He tries to convince his editor of what he saw, but the editor's like really apprehensive about it. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. There's not a giant lizard on an island. And Professor Hayashida shows up, and he visits Hiroshi in the hospital, and he shows Hiroshi pictures of the 1954 Godzilla attack, and says that he believes him. And, you know, just to solidify that this is just a direct sequel to that movie. And he also says that he believes that that sea louse was just feeding on Godzilla, basically got irradiated and got huge.
Yeah. This is
wild,
like, tonally, because it seems like your first instinct is like, okay, it's really kind of unbelievable that there'd be a giant monster where the island is, because we've been through decades of movies where just monster after monster after monster has appeared. But
right
now, with everything but the original Godzilla being wiped out and we're starting basically fresh, like, Godzilla, the first Godzilla came out of the sea for like a couple days back in 1954 and then got vaporized by the oxygen destroyer, and then 30 years of nothing. No right. monsters, no aliens, no none of that shit. So the appearance of a second Godzilla now is like a big shock.
Right.
And
like, this isn't Godzilla friend of children either.
No.
So. Well, that's what I was just about to say, is I was like, oh, Godzilla is like the bad guy in this movie. He's not the good guy that's going to like save the town like, you know, the last one I watched. Because again, my first Godzilla experience was Godzilla versus Hedorah, where Godzilla was the good guy and was fighting Hedorah. So it's interesting to see the series go back and forth, like bouncing back and forth between him being like a good guy and him not being a good guy.
Yeah. Well, and this movie starts a new series of movies that will go all the way into the mid 1990s. And, you know, this Heisei era of Godzilla, as it's called, is kind of interesting for taking Godzilla back and keeping him in this much more like amoral area, where like this is not a Godzilla who's a hero or a villain. This is a Godzilla that is simply a giant thing that is outside of the scope of human morality. And even when there's something worse that Godzilla's taking care of, Godzilla's not a thing that's on our side. Mm-hmm. You know, and they really try to re-tap into Godzilla as kind of like a specter of rage and a force of nature that I think is really portrayed pretty well in this movie when he does show back up, which takes a while, actually, now that I think about it.
He just seems confused and like, I don't know what's happening, but I'm hungry and I'm gonna go towards this place that's hungry. Like,
big man guy eat. We need a big can for the big man. Anyway, continue, Charlotte.
I had to plug in my headphones. I'm so sorry. They were beeping. You can cut that out.
No.
Oh, okay. So Goro is informed by the government that they know that the monster's there and they know it's Godzilla, but they're not going to run his story because they don't want everybody to panic that Godzilla has returned. And so, seeking some validation, he goes and he visits Professor Hayashida, and the professor explains that Godzilla is a living weapon, like basically a living nuclear weapon created by man. And even though he's also aware of what's happened, like, Hiroshi's sister is there, but she was kept in the dark this entire time about whether or not he was alive or dead or anything, just because the story was connected to Godzilla. But Goro tells her that her brother is alive, and he's confined at a police hospital for having seen Godzilla, basically. And so she just, like, immediately runs to the police hospital, like, through everyone that stands in her way to get to her brother. Like, she breaks through a whole line of police to get to him. But she gets there, she's hugging her brother, like a photographer from Goro's
the newspaper.
From the newspaper is there to take pictures, and it was all basically just a ploy from him to take pictures to sell papers. Which sucks of him, but you know.
She kind of shoots him a look, and he kind of does this like, all right, it's business, you know.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't do a bad thing. It's, you know.
Yeah. So then we cut to like a Russian sub underwater, and something's quickly approaching it on radar. The captain decides he's going to fire his missiles at it, and because they're assuming it's an attack by an American ship. But of course, the thing on the radar is Godzilla, who immediately retaliates and destroys them. And something I was talking to Derek about, like at the time, was that, like, I've heard some Russian, and the way that they speak Russian in this movie is really interesting.
Like, that's a diplomatic way to put it.
Yeah.
This is definitely a bunch of Americans who were like phonetically sounding out some Russian.
Right.
Because they pronounce some words like they're pronouncing it almost, as you pointed out, with like closer to like a Hispanic accent.
Yeah, like they're speaking Spanish.
Like these like, fucking white people from California, the only other accent they've ever heard is British and Spanish. So they're just like, which one of these is Russian? I don't know.
Right.
And then
I mean, yeah.
He'll be like, blah, 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 Los Angeles.
Right.
The one that killed me was the American, the over the top, some guy they clearly pulled off the streets, like,
oh
some
my
tourist.
God. Yes.
I was like, just say these lines, please.
When they get the when they get to the point when it's the ambassadors, yeah, and the American ambassador has the most unrealistic, strange delivery.
Yeah.
Sounding like he's reading for the original Resident Evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't open that door. In response to this happening, Japan decides they're going to lift the media blackout on Godzilla because they would rather everyone know that it's Godzilla than for Russia to think that America just destroyed their sub.
Yeah, because Godzilla destroys the sub and Russia assumes it's the U.S. because this is smack in the middle of the Cold War.
Yeah, I was going to say this is during the Cold War, huh?
Yeah, so Russia's like, we're pretty fucking sure this is America. And America's like, we didn't do this. And yeah, Japan sees and goes, okay, well, we wanted to keep this a secret. But yeah, the global peace is very important. So we're gonna not withhold the secret because we don't want nuclear war to start up just because, you know, of a misunderstanding.
Right. And so Hiroshi declares his revenge against Godzilla for killing his crewmates, as you do.
Right. That's the only, that's, you know, the masculine urge to swear revenge against forces of nature.
Right. The papers all start running Goro's stories on Godzilla and Hiroshi, and Naoko, who's Hiroshi's sister, is like really upset with Goro because now they have been fully exploited for the paper, basically. The military convenes to make a plan, and they decide that they're going to use their new Flying Fortress Super X, which is like just this big thing that fires cadmium shells and can resist impossibly high temperatures. Like, they basically just made it to fight Godzilla, even though Godzilla has been dead for 30 years. And they do, like, this multinational early warning system for Godzilla, put that in place. And then Godzilla makes landfall in Shizuoka and starts going after this nuclear power plant. And while Godzilla is absorbing energy, it gets distracted by birds and leaves, like basically just like the sounds of the birds that they're making to navigate. And Hayashida believes that this basically proves this theory that he had, that like dinosaurs and Godzilla had like a homing instinct using the same magnetism as birds. And so that definitely won't come back up later, but
no, some wild, fucking light, soft sci-fi bullshit.
Yeah.
No.
Hayashida sends Hiroshi to see his geologist friend, Professor Minami, on Mount Mihara. And there's a volcano there that they're investigating. The military leaders are still discussing what to do next. And the plan is basically now to draw Godzilla to the volcano and force it to erupt and, like, trap Godzilla. And in the meantime, the military is going to evacuate the area and do whatever they can. And this is when the American and Russian envoys show up and meet in Japan. And they both basically go, like, we have to shoot nukes at this thing. Because it's a big lizard.
It's the only way to deal with big lizard is nukes.
Right.
This is actually my favorite part of the movie.
This is
great. I thought
it
was really interesting.
It is, yeah. The prime minister, like, hears them both out. And, like, he's already talked with his cabinet to discuss, like, what options, which is worse, basically. And, I mean, they don't even know if a nuclear missile would destroy Godzilla. They don't know that would even work.
I would argue it's a crapshoot, right? Considering he feeds on nuclear energy and was the first one was either created or awakened by the nuclear bomb. Like, would maybe the force, the physical kinetic energy of the nuclear bomb would do damage, but, you know.
Right. But the prime minister tells them both, like, we're not going to use nukes. Like, and what he says specifically is basically, if Godzilla appeared in Washington or in Moscow, like, would you have the same courage to use nukes?
Yeah, to sacrifice that many people when you don't even know if it'll work.
Right.
And the impassioned plea works, right? Like, this is three countries sitting down at a table and two of them pushing really hard for what would be the wrong decision, but Japan making a plea for their sovereignty, right? And their, like, and for the humanity of the situation of, like, if the role were reversed, like, you would not want this to happen on your soil either. And America and Russia both agreeing, like, okay, no, you are right. That is a line we cannot cross.
Right. So the captain of a freighter in Tokyo Harbor, this Russian captain of this Russian freighter in Tokyo Harbor, says that the government's decided not to use nukes. And the nukes were controlled by this freighter in Tokyo Harbor. Like, and it's I guess, just disguised as, like, a merchant vessel or something.
Yeah.
But
it's got, like the controls to launch the nuke.
Right. So he goes in, he's like, starting to disable that.
Yeah, he's kind of grumpy, but he shuts it down. He's like, yeah, you know, their infinite wisdom, they've decided to not launch the nukes. But he does it, because, you know.
Yeah. But then Godzilla appears and heads towards Tokyo Bay, and the Defense Force, like, sets up a perimeter and everybody evacuates. And Godzilla shows up, and this is probably one of my favorite shots just because Godzilla's, like, the suit, like, they snarl with it.
Yes.
Like, it lifts half of its mouth, and it looks really good.
They've got a bunch of extra animatronics in the head that they didn't do anything like in the Showa era. So, yeah, you see, like, the eyelids kind of, you know, not just blink, but kind of squint, and you see it snarl and curl its lips up, and you see the, when it opens its mouth, a lot of bad, cheap animatronics, like, you know, for example, Charlotte, we watched King Kong for another pass over on Certain Point of View, and, like, a lot of these animatronic, you know, giant monsters, they open their mouth, and it's, like, on a hinge. Right.
Right.
And they understood that that's not how an animal's jaw works. When it opens, the hinge of the jaw actually slides back and rotates back, too. So it's a much more realistic, you know,
like,
set
they stopped
of
doing
moves.
The Freddy Fazbear mouth, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, it's really impressive stuff.
Yeah. So they rain down missiles on Godzilla, and the same captain of the freighter is like, oh, crap. So he's, like, running back inside trying to just deactivate the missiles. But Godzilla, like, cuts a swath with its atomic breath just along the coastline, just destroys everything.
Oh, my God.
Stops him from getting to the controls. So at this time, they're prepping the Super X for launch. Godzilla walks into Tokyo, and he's just plowing through roads and buildings, and he, like, lifts up this train and looks inside. And there's this dude on the train that just looks ecstatic to have been picked up by Godzilla. I don't know what that was about.
Yeah. You know, not all the extras were on the same page.
I noticed that, too. I was like, why is he smiling?
Yeah. And so everybody evacuates, and Godzilla heads to Shinjuku. And there's this scene while it's heading there. The military leaders are like in their bunker, and Godzilla's passing overhead. And everything just gets really quiet while they wait for Godzilla to walk over. And that was a good shot.
Yeah.
And then, like, the coolest dude, like this homeless guy, just grabs an entire buffet's worth of food for himself. He's just chowing down. He's like, ah, I need to get some better wine for this.
King
and Godzilla,
shit.
Like, walks by and looks in and roars at him. And the guy's just like, can you not? I'm trying to eat. And Godzilla just leaves.
He specifically was like, hey, like, you have the whole rest of Shinjuku to destroy. He's like, let me eat and drink in peace, please.
And Godzilla's like, okay.
Say less. Sorry. Say less, King, and Godzilla's out of there.
Food is life.
So, yeah. Godzilla passes by Hayashida's lab, and they start firing waves at him to make him stop in place. And, like, a laser tank starts firing at him.
They brought back the, like, 60s-ass maser tanks.
Yeah. Godzilla, like, turns around, and as it does, like, its tail crashes into the lab building with, like, half our main characters in it. And so the building's starting to fall apart, and Hayashida, Goro, and Naoko are all trapped inside. And finally, the Super X takes off. And it shows up, and it starts firing, like, flares to distract Godzilla to make it look up. Open its mouth like, huh? And then they start firing cadmium rounds in Godzilla's mouth. And the cadmium, like, slows Godzilla's heart down. Like, you can hear it, like, beat slower.
The logic is that because cadmium is used to put the brakes on, like, a nuclear reactor spinning out of control, it could have a similar effect on slowing down the nuclear reactor that is Godzilla's heart.
Right. But because earlier the captain could not stop the missile from firing, the Soviet nuke fires from their space satellite, and they have about 30 minutes before it hits Shinjuku, because it's just supposed to hit wherever Godzilla is. So they start another evacuation of the area. They assemble the cabinet. So Godzilla's fighting Super X, and tries to hit it with atomic breath, but, like, Super X was designed to withstand that, so it doesn't do anything. And the cadmium finally working, Godzilla just kind of, like, goes stiff and falls over onto this building unconscious. Just like, ugh.
He, like, collapses against the skyscraper.
Right.
It just takes a little nap.
Right. And then Hayashida wants to alert Mount Mihara as the alert goes out to evacuate into the subway. He wants to be able to still lure Godzilla over there. America agrees to launch its own missile to collide with the Russian missile so that it at least doesn't go off in Japan. And a helicopter arrives to save everybody at the lab, but it only manages to take Hayashida and the equipment with Hiroshi with them. So Naoko and Goro are still in the building. So they had to find a way out now. The missiles, meanwhile, collide in the stratosphere, but the explosion creates, like, an electrical storm and an EMP that disables the Super X, and it wakes Godzilla up. And so the Super X manages to fly again after restarting, but it's out of cadmium missiles now, so, like, it can't do anything to Godzilla. So Naoko and Goro managed to escape with the help of that homeless guy from earlier.
Oh my god, King, another King moment.
Yeah.
Right. And so the Super X, now unable to actually, like, hurt Godzilla in any way, starts leading Godzilla through the city before Godzilla, like, just pushes a skyscraper over on top of it. Which, first of all, I thought was interesting for the reason of, like it's an animal, right? In this, Godzilla is basically the force of nature, but it still is exhibiting a lot more intelligence as, like, the Godzilla that we knew that could use the big man-made devices.
Yeah.
I don't know.
This is still a large, like, sapient, you know, creature to some degree, but
right. So Naoko and Goro run off, and the homeless king, he kind of passes out as Godzilla goes by. what happens to him is kind of left up to imagination, I guess. But Hayashida turns on the homing device, and Godzilla heads towards Mount Mihara to follow it. And Goro and Naoko follow behind. And so Godzilla follows the device all the way to the volcano's edge. And is just like standing at the edge, staring at this homing device like, well, I want to get there, but there's a big pit here, you know? And they set off explosions around the volcano, which causes it to erupt. And then Godzilla like falls into the lava and the smoke's billowing out. And they're all watching what's happening. Like the cabinet and the prime minister are all still watching what's happening like on a screen. And the prime minister's crying while Godzilla screams and dies in the, well, not dies, like falls down into the volcano.
It seems like he's dying.
It might be dying. And so Hayashida, Hiroshi, Goro, Naoko, they're all looking on from the lab in the helicopter as the credits roll. And that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was a much heavier and more impressive movie than I've been used to for a while from Godzilla.
It's very consistent. Like, there wasn't anything that, like, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it,
right.
It's like, it turns out putting talent and money and time behind one of these movies gives you results.
Like, yeah.
Not,
right.
Not to be fucking obvious, but.
So, like, the scene where he's crying and Godzilla's screaming was just really, that was a really strong scene because, like, Godzilla was made because, you know, the bombs were dropped on them. And like they're still kind of stuck in a situation where other people and their nuclear weapons are still trying to decide their fate, you know? And so like Godzilla being a representation of that and their suffering and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why that scene where America and Russia are like pressuring the prime minister, and it's just like, you know, you could see him clearly struggling with it. And it's like, you get why. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about why he's struggling to make that decision. And it just felt really powerful for, you know, a movie about a big, big monster.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I hadn't seen the Japanese version of this movie ever. I've only ever seen the American cut, which is called Godzilla 1985, and is in a lot of ways a very different movie. And my appreciation for this movie skyrocketed watching the Japanese version, because it's a better movie. It's a more ideologically like coherent and consistent movie. And it made me feel kind of almost spiteful for the American version and for another movie that I will get to in due fucking time.
Right, because America always paints themselves as the heroes.
Let's start with the one thing that Godzilla 1985 did really well. I think the one thing it did better than the Japanese version. I'm going to post this in the chat here. I know that, so apparently this is in, maybe in some versions of the Japanese version, like certain home video releases. I know this is the case on the VHS of Godzilla 1985 that I watched as a kid, but they redo the screams at the end. And I think tonally it is much more powerful.
Oh, absolutely.
It's known as the B-mix.
Right now.
It sounds much more confused and in pain.
Exactly.
And I think really helps to humanize kind of what this movie is getting at, which is like, this Godzilla is not a villain. It's a giant animal. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a giant, somewhat intelligent animal that feeds, you know, that's life patterns are unfortunately destructive to us. So that's the one thing I'm going to give him. But everything else sucks shit.
Yeah.
So they did two major things, I think summarize the bulk of changes to Godzilla 1985. The first is it was heavily, heavily re-edited to make the Americans more heroic and the Russians more villainous. A couple of great specific examples of that, you know, the shot, after everyone decides to stand down, excuse me, and the you know, they show the two nuclear satellites in orbit. Well, right. They edit out the American one. So the only one that gets seen is the Russian nuclear satellite.
Oh, my God.
Because, of course, you know, it's one of those things where through omission, through like the Kuleshov effect, you have created the implication that Russia specifically is standing by just fucking waiting. They also, the guy on the sub who dies, you know, in the process of trying to deactivate the nukes, that whole sequence is re-edited so that he actually manually launches the nukes instead of disabling it.
See, that's what I thought was happening at first, and then I realized, like, oh, okay, Godzilla, like, took out something, so it, yeah. Like
it's glitching out, and now he's trying to go stop it. But it's re-edited in the American version to make it very specific and clear that the Russians are choosing to nuke Japan.
Right.
As opposed to trying to avert a nuclear accident. So, you know, Cold War shit. And, like, you're never going to hear me cape for the nation of Russia. But, you know... It's kind of gross that the movie was re-edited from a message about, like, look, see, like, our shared humanity will allow us to, you know, understand each other, you know, and that will transcend national boundaries. A very Ishiro Honda kind of message, and got turned into, but them Russians is real evil. So the other thing that happened was Raymond Burr was brought back. They added, like, they filmed like 10 minutes of new footage with Raymond Burr returning as Steve Martin, the journalist character he played in the American version of the original Godzilla, which, you know, hey, our fucking gay icon, Raymond Burr. And that turned out to be a great choice, despite the fact that I'm not big on like creating new characters and adding them into these movies, you know, just to give an American POV. But they were dead set on making the American version of this like a fucking satire. Just like poking fun at Godzilla and poking fun at itself the whole way through. And basically it turns out Raymond Burr is like the one person on set who was just like, abso-fucking-lutely not, we're not doing this. Reportedly, the director came and pitched some like joke lines to him. And Raymond Burr did not respond. He just stared back until the director said, okay, no, then. So gay icon almost single-handedly saving the US version of this movie from being a complete piece of shit. There's some other cool. Sorry, you go ahead.
Oh, I just said, well, that's good.
Yeah. There's some other cool behind the scenes stuff going on. So the first choice for Godzilla suit actor bowed out at the very last minute. So they cast, his name's Kenpachiro Satsuma, and he played a bunch of the villains in the Showa era. And like the suit was not sized for him. It was built for this other actor. So he didn't fit in it great. And it was kind of a grueling process, but he actually would go on to become the permanent Godzilla through the 80s and 90s. You know, so that's kind of a funny twist of fate there. And then, there is a name probably Charlotte might be familiar with. I'm expecting Britt won't be. Charlotte, do you know who Shinji Higuchi is?
That sounds familiar.
Okay. Shinji Higuchi is like the motherfucking man when it comes to special effects in Japan right now. He was an uncredited like assistant on this movie. He would go on to be the special effects director for things like the 90s Gamera trilogy that's extremely fucking good. He would go on to be heavily involved with storyboarding a lot of the like rebuild of Evangelion movies.
Oh, he did Gunbuster.
He directed Shin Godzilla, you know, alongside Hideaki Anno. He directed Shin Ultraman. He was responsible for a lot of the special effects stuff behind that live action Attack on Titan that, you know, blew up a while back.
Mm-hmm.
So this dude's the motherfucking man, and this is really where his career starts, which is pretty cool. You fucking love to see it. I'm really excited. He's also, I want to say he was tangentially involved in, but I might be thinking of somebody else, another later Godzilla movie. But anyway, we're going to see more of this dude's work later in Castle Bravo, but very cool. This is his origin story, as he was just an assistant modeler working on this movie, helping, you know, put together sets and shit, basically. Good shit.
Can I say something completely random?
Yes, hit me.
Do you know what Godzilla's suit reminds me of?
Well, I will when you tell me, presumably.
A giant fucking avocado. Like,
it does have a very avocado-like texture to it.
The whole time I was just like, I want to pet him. Like, he looks like he'd be good guac.
There's a good texture to the suit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great pebbly, you know, yeah, and in some of the lighting, he is very green
human-ish.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just want to reach out and touch it.
Yeah. I just want to, you know, see if he's ripe.
Now this is going to be as much for Brit, more for Brit almost than anything else. Cause Charlotte, you remember how them Godzilla suits were starting to look towards the end of.
Yeah.
But let me see if I can pull up like where Godzilla's suit is going to end up looking like by the time we hit the 90s.
Why does he have human looking eyes? That threw me off so completely.
That's gonna change some. But yeah, it's cool because it makes him feel much more like easy to sympathize with.
Yeah, because he has like these deep brown eyes, and I'm like, I have some of those. Why does he have them?
Here we go. Here, let me get this picture right here thrown in the chat if I can fucking get it over there. Here we go. And boop.
Okay.
So Godzilla's gonna get redesigned a little bit in 89 and look more like that all the way through the 90s. So you see that pebbled texture gets kept. That's like very, very crunchy look. The face is gonna get redesigned. It's almost a little more feline.
Yeah, I was going to say, he looks like he got a little kitty nose.
You're going to get stronger eyebrows, and those eyes are going to be that really, really heavy, like, orange and red, much angrier looking,
tiny,
you know.
Little ears.
Yeah, the ears. Godzilla's going to have these little bitty-ass ears.
Oh, look at those ears. I didn't even see them.
Yeah. So, you know, the look has to evolve a bit, but you're seeing something that's this interesting mix between where we were in the 70s, right, and where we're going with this look.
Right.
Look at that big avocado.
Oh my god. See, I can't unsee the fucking avocado skin now. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. That's what you get for fucking giving me Hedora.
Yeah. And then sadly, I don't have any fun titles for this movie. I don't know. You know, for a while, we were having some real goofy-ass West German titles for every movie, and it seems like that's evening out. I'm still going to try to make a note in future episodes of Castle Bravo when there are fun titles, but there weren't for this. It's all Return of Godzilla and Godzilla insert the year it came out, you know? 84 or 85, depending on what country you were in.
Mm-hmm.
Was it more serious title, I guess.
Yeah, no
serious
no,
film, serious title.
Right, you can, there's no Frankenstein for Godzilla to fight. So that's right. Another thing. This is like a rare movie where it's just Godzilla. There's no
it
other
is just
monster.
Godzilla. It's
a little
me.
Sea louse thing. It doesn't really count.
Yeah,
Godzilla doesn't fight a sea louse monster.
Was that like? I feel like there was tension between Naoko and Maki. Was that? Like, was that, I didn't know why that was intentional. Like, just the deep, like, 80s zoom in as they stare at each other. I'm like, is this leading somewhere? What's the point of this?
Not really, but it's the 80s, so a little of that is expected.
Yeah, for sure.
You were hoping it would lead to them, like, driving off together in a fucking convertible as more city pop plays at the end?
I mean, either that or the boat, man.
I mean, we got city pop.
Yeah, we did get the city pop. We just didn't get the two of them in the convertible driving down the countryside.
Yeah, Naoko's written a little bit differently than the female leads of the other movies recently.
And she actually has a purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
And her purpose is, like, to serve tea, from what I could see. Like, everybody else is all, like, doing business stuff, and then, like, here she is. Here's her tea.
Well, a lot of the other ones, they actually, like, have, like, one or two scenes where they're, like, the driving force. That they, like, solve that problem.
It kind of depends on the director, right? Because, like, Honda almost did not see gender a lot of times. Like, he did, obviously, especially in a very, like, you know, he was an older Japanese dude, right? Like,
right.
You know, growing up in a much more conservative time. But at the same time, a lot of the women in Honda's movies were just, like, kind of just other characters. They were usually not necessarily the love interests. It was, like, the partner journalist, right? Or another right. one of the scientists, or, you know, and they, you know, but then Jun Fukuda was like a totally different monster. Fukuda was like, he wanted to make the biggest and most colorful and most outrageous women characters he could in a way that kind of ripped, right? Like the girl who'd been living on the island for like 18 years in Son of Godzilla, yeah. or the fucking girlfriend who does kung fu in Godzilla versus right. Gigan, like shit like that. You know, it's either that or there are no women, like in Godzilla versus Megalon, which is a movie about homosexuality. So
that's right.
You could.
That sounds incredible.
Oh man. We had Stormy on to talk about that one.
Oh yeah.
And the only women in the movie are a handful of dancers in the extremely gay undersea kingdom who are all in like big campy wait.
There's an undersea kingdom.
Yeah, it's called Seatopia.
Oh my god.
And so here's the thing. This is again great fucking podcast content. But the king of Seatopia, I'm gonna show you a picture of this man.
Oh god.
Because it's great. And This is the main like human villain in Godzilla versus Megalon.
Yep.
Yeah. It's him and his fucking burlesque drag backup dancers.
Yeah, with those fucking sideburns.
Yeah. So yeah, like what's interesting about Godzilla Return of Godzilla, I almost said Godzilla 1985. That's not what we watched. That's a different version. But yeah, it did feel like kind of a step backward for the female main character, because through Honda and Fukuda's reign, women felt like they usually had bigger parts or larger personalities. Right. Yeah. One or the other, at least, if not both. You know, God, especially coming off of Terror of Mechagodzilla, where we had the professor's daughter. I'm always bad with names, but when so much of the emotional like part of the human side of the plot was around her as like a partially robotic person, you know, struggling with her humanity and her independence. And then we get this, and it's just, yeah, here's the sister, and she's there to, you know,
make bedroom eyes at the writer and serve tea.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
She's there to fawn.
Yeah.
I will say, for what it's worth, that is going to get solved real fucking quickly. The 90s actually is really, really good, if I remember correctly, about having a lot more major like women characters who have much more like agency and impact on the plot and drive things to happen. There is one consistent recurring character, a woman named Miki Sagusa, who will be like a recurring character like all through the 90s, as I recall.
Hmm.
So it'll get better, but that's probably one of the few real downsides of this movie, if you ask me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Otherwise, stellar movie. You know, yeah. I mean, it's openly political in a way that fits, you know, alongside a lot of what Ishiro Honda was doing with the original Godzilla. It feels very in concert with the original, like having the whole sequence of like, we're going to talk about the So I'm trying to think of the best way to approach this. Britt, as someone who has not seen the original Godzilla, there is a major sequence in the original Godzilla where the Japanese Diet, which is sort of like their Congress or something like that, are arguing about whether or not to reveal their suspicions and accuse America of having accidentally created Godzilla. And the argument is basically like, this is the truth. The Americans were doing nuclear tests in the Bikini Atoll. You know, they either woke this thing up or created it. And that has to matter because it is what happened. And then the other contingency is like, okay, but we are in a fragile world that is recovering from World War II, and our relationships with America are improving, and the world needs that stability and that unity. And if we come out with these kind of accusations, even if they're true, we could shatter that global unity. I think it's an incredibly important piece of the original movie is the idea that struggle between like what is, which of this is right? Is the truth right, or is the long goal right?
That's one thing that I love about these movies. Like, even as cheesy as Godzilla versus Ghidorah was, like, there's always like a message behind each movie.
Sometimes it's more artful than others, but
right. No, absolutely. But like, yeah, it's not just like, you know, random Godzilla comes out of the sea and just starts destroying shit for no reason. It's like, no, there's a reasoning this shit's happening, you know, the, you know, pollution, whatever, like, and then to kind of like go into the background of it and like kind of figure out why they're making out these decisions. And it's just, there's a lot more to Godzilla than just the surface, like what people seem to scream about the most is just he goes and, you know, fucking wrecks cities and
yeah,
that kind of shit.
This is a movie about the Cold War and about how neither side is really a villain in the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we need to settle the fuck down.
Godzilla has a lot of the underlying themes that I didn't realize were present. You know, whether or not they cheese it up or not, I think they still have good messages they're trying to portray, which I didn't know going into watching these movies.
Yeah, yeah. Now, again, looking at these movies through a more critical eye, I am a little worried about the 80s and 90s because historically the 90s was a really bad time for media. Right? Like, the 90s was a great time for dumb, like edgy shit or Saturday morning cartoon shit. And I
a lot of stuff hasn't aged well from the 90s.
Right. So I would love to be able to be done with this season and say, okay, the 90s aged pretty well, but we're gonna see about that.
You're gonna learn today.
I'm gonna learn today. let's see what other bullet points did I have here. We kind of skipped to like the interesting thematic elements and the stuff that'll stick with us. I have one last piece, but I'm going to hold on to a lot of this for a very far down the road episode. Watching this again as an adult, watching the Japanese version of this, it is super clear to me that this heavily inspired Shin Godzilla, the 2016 movie that is extremely popular, you know, online, in fandom, etc., directed by Hideaki Anno of Evangelion fame. I'm going to put heavily inspired in scare quotes there. I think that the Shin Godzilla feels like a remake of this movie in retrospect, but it feels like a remake of this movie with the exact opposite politics, with extremely nationalistic politics. I keep saying that the episode on Shin Godzilla, the movie everyone fucking loves, and to be fair, it's a good ass movie, but that episode's gonna get me killed, and I'm only getting spicier with this movie under my belt. So but I'm gonna hold the rant for Shin Godzilla. It's gonna be difficult. I'm gonna have to hold on to this for like a fucking year, but we'll get there.
We're gonna have years of foreshadowing before that episode comes out.
From the very beginning of this podcast, it's been me going, you better fucking wait for the Shin Godzilla episode. I'm gonna have to go into witness protection after this shit's done.
Oh shit.
Does anybody have any final thoughts about this movie? I mean, we've kind of opined that, like, wow, this was a good one. This is a deep one. This was, you know, more political and more thematic than a lot of these have been, you know.
Yeah, but it had a good mixture of cheese and, like, real story.
Yeah. So. It sure did still rip ass when Godzilla vaporized an actual human being.
Oh, with absolutely. The atomic breath.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know. We could talk all we want about, like, this is a good movie about the Cold War and about political, like, international relations. Yeah, but
relations. It absolutely has its cheese.
Yeah, but Godzilla did fucking spit fire at a giant floating hover ship, and that ripped, too. There were laser tanks with little satellite discs that go pew-pew. Good shit. Good shit.
A lot of towers falling.
Yeah. Well, you know. Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba.
Oh, no.
That's a wrap on this episode. Thank you all so much for joining us on our journey so far. Britt, thanks for joining us again, especially after we made you deal with the vagina garbage monster last season.
Of course.
You got anything you want to plug?
No, I guess I'll do my Twitter. Y'all can find my chaos thirst and tweets at Twitter at itspeachia. Yeah, and I guess we can promote the podcast, huh?
Yeah, yeah. You can find me yeah. and Britt on Super Lux Games Cast, which is on Twitter, Twitch, most platforms as Official SDGC. That's SDGC, Super Deluxe Games Cast. It's really important because Summer Games Done Quick just started, and we're going to get discovered by a lot of folks who can't type acronyms right. So.
Yay!
Does that happen?
that's a win for us, baby. What do you mean?
We're so fucking back. So, look, with social media being a less reliable tool these days for spreading the word, that's the diplomatic way for me to describe the current state of fucking Twitter and Blue Sky and all of this shit.
Right.
I'm going to focus a little less on plugging our social media accounts, which you can still follow us on Twitter at Castle Bravo Pod for production updates. But instead, I'm going to really start asking for your help. Rating and reviewing Castle Bravo on your podcast app of choice really helps us out with the almighty algorithms. And if you like the show, then recommending the show to your friends and cohorts is the single best way to spread the word.
Cohorts.
Some people have cohorts.
The best compliment is a referral from you.
Yeah. Some people in my life I would describe primarily as cohorts. Sure. So.
I mostly have oomphies.
We do love an oomphie. Final note. Season 3 is going to be a little more sporadic and spread out as we continue to deal with guest management. So we're probably not going to hit with new episodes every week. But look, we're like, what, 28 episodes in at this point? 29? I don't know. I think this is the 28th episode.
This is episode 28. Yeah,
thank you for keeping track. at this point, we're clearly in it for the long haul. So, you know, we'll be back next week, 2 weeks from now. Who knows? But we will be back at the very least covering through the end of the Heisei era. This is what we get for taking a break. We go off even for a couple months and I forget how to podcast.
See, this is your bad for making me your first guest coming off of a break.
That's all we got for this week. See you next whenever, and take care, everyone.
Castle Bravo is a production of Derek Van Dyke and Charlotte Landale. All editing is performed by Derek Van Dyke. Special thanks to Kyrie Lamont for our art assets, and to David Van Dyke for our theme song, Pools of Memory.